Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports, also a role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, and then Thursdays with Jeffrey Wright and company. David, how's it going?
Hey, man, it's going well. How are you?
I am doing well. I need to start in one place, and that would be with Dabo Swinney and what he had to say to Clemson fans and media yesterday. What'd you make of his message? Right, this is not the first time we've seen this, but this is just a little excerpt. If Memphis is tired of winning, they can send me on my way. But I'm going to go somewhere else and coach. I ain't going to the beach. Hell, I'm 55. I got a long way to go. He said it in a very calm tone of voice, David, but the message was very clear.
Yeah, it was very clear. And it's a message we've heard now from Dabo Swinney year after year after year because he's become a prisoner of his own success. And he is trapped, quite literally, at Clemson because they will not fire him. He is owed $60 million. He's won multiple national titles at Clemson. So he's not going to get fired. But nobody's particularly happy except for maybe Dabo with the performance, because when you set a national title level standard and then you willfully neglect to change with the sport, then what's happening? We're seeing it unfold in front of our very eyes. We're seeing Dabo Swinney become what Frank Beamer was in the last 5 years of his tenure, what Bobby Bowden was for most of the last 10 years of his tenure, what Joe Paterno was towards the end. We're seeing a guy who's built a program no longer be able to sustain it. He's too good to be fired. His buyout's too large to be fired. He means too much to the program to be fired. But we all just have to sit in his misery because, oh, man, we saw what it could be, and it's obviously not going to be that anymore. You don't have what it takes to get it back. So it's just this is just a horrific cycle that I don't think Clemson is going to pull out of anytime soon.
Well, and Connor, producer extraordinaire yesterday, drew one of the best comparisons I've ever heard to Dabo Swinney to something in real life. He brought up the narcissistic parent. That's kind of how Dabo Swinney treats his fan base. I've given you everything. Even when they do wrong, you try to berate them a little bit. You try to get on their case. I've given you everything. I guess I'm just the worst, huh? I'm just the worst. You guys don't appreciate what you have. That's kind of what Dabo does. And it's like, I get your plight. And it is a flex to sit there and say, I've won eight. In the last 10 years, I've won eight ACC titles. In the past 10 years, I've been to seven college football playoffs. Like, I get all of that. Like, that's a flex in itself. But it's strange to me because it's so unlike any other great football coach we've had in the history of the game. Nick Saban would never be caught dead saying something like that. Kirby Smart would never do that. You know, like, usually those guys say, well, the standard's the standard. We're 1-2. I want to go change that on the field. You know, I apologize to our fans for our performance through 3 weeks. You know what I mean? Like, that's usually how great football coaches go about it. Dabo bucks against that trend so hard.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, to take it a step further, he's along with Connor's point, he's like, you know, I changed your diapers, Clemson.
Right, diapers. Yeah, exactly.
Where's your gratitude? And it's like, yeah, man, like you have done a lot for that program. But, I mean, the results have obviously slipped. Here's what's going to happen, man. They're going to figure out a way over the last 9 games of the regular season to go 8-1. They're going to slip into some bowl game that nobody really cares about, and they're going to win it. And he's going to say, wow, another 10-win season. Can't you guys be grateful and happy for winning 10 games, you know, for the 7th time in however many years? I mean, you know, and it's just like it's got to be getting old if you're a Clemson fan, because we were told this was going to be a vintage,
yes,
elite national title caliber Clemson team. And not only have they struggled, you know, it was conceivable that even a good Clemson team could start 1-2 because, like, LSU's really good. And Georgia Tech playing at their place, they've got a squad this year. Like, it wasn't inconceivable that they could be here, but they've looked so bad. I mean, they look bad. Cade Klubnik, his stock is falling rapidly. Their defense has underperformed, and it's not a title caliber program anymore. So, you know, it just feels like we're stuck in this Dabo sort of cycle that it's not going to change.
Yeah, no doubt. Now I have to ask you your thoughts on Arkansas Memphis. I mean, it's just, I have to. What are your thoughts? Arkansas opens as a 7.5-point favorite. It's been down to 7 at some points. I know a lot of people are actually picking the Memphis side, the plus 7.5 here. How do you feel about it? And, like, for Memphis, when it comes to Talen Green, that concern's big in my mind. How big of a concern is that to you?
Well, you can't stop that guy. He is quite literally unstoppable. Now, maybe an elite defense, like maybe a top 10 defense in college football could hold him down and keep him from just going ballistic. But he's really talented. He's really good. I think if you zoom out though, and think about just sort of all the other factors here, there's some things that sort of set up in Memphis's favor. For one thing, emotional loss for Arkansas. I mean, a brutal loss that they're coming off of against Ole Miss. They're also looking ahead to Notre Dame coming to their place, the following week. That's huge. I mean, that's a huge deal for Arkansas. So it's a trap spot. You lost your SEC opener. You got Notre Dame up next. Oh, wait, we got to go play in a half-renovated stadium against Memphis? Do what now? You know, so there's a little bit of, I think, a psychological edge there for Memphis because this is a huge game for Memphis. It's a huge game. It's as big of a game as there is on their schedule from a, hey, this is our chance to make a statement sort of opportunity. And then you think about, like, that opportunity. Look how bad the noon slate of games is, man. Like, the best game at noon on Saturday is Texas Tech versus Utah. And Memphis and Arkansas is on ABC. It's not on ESPNU. It's not on ESPN2. It's not on ESPN+ or the CW. Like, it's on big ABC. So, I mean, what a massive opportunity for Memphis to go out and make a statement here. And I think Arkansas's defense showed us what it is against Ole Miss, and it's not very good.
Yep.
So, I think Memphis is going to have a chance to at least try to keep up with Talen Green. I mean, the key is going to be getting a couple of turnovers, getting them behind the sticks. Hopefully they get some holds, put themselves in bad situations, and you're able to get off the field.
Yeah, this is the way I sort of put it too, though. I think this game, if Memphis is going to win, you're going to have to be in that sort of 24-17, 24-20 range. I don't necessarily feel that Memphis, with the offense that we've seen through 3 weeks, is going to be able to win that 48-45 shootout. Do you sort of
probably
share that
not,
sentiment?
We haven't had this. Like, Memphis hasn't had to find that gear, though. I mean,
right.
Look at how inept Troy was offensively this past week. You know, Memphis didn't have to go full throttle to win that game comfortably. I mean, sure, I don't know that this is your peak Memphis offense, your most elite Memphis offense of the past decade, you know, but I'll say this. I mean, I've got Brendan Lewis in my others receiving votes category for quarterback power ranking.
Hell yeah.
He's been efficient. I mean, he's been effective. He's taken care of the football. He's showed me more with his legs than I knew he had. So, like, I think if the game calls for it, there is another level that Memphis offense could potentially reach. I wouldn't think it crazy to suggest that Memphis could get to 30 in this game if that's sort of what the flow of the game dictates.
Now, another game in the American versus an SEC opponent, Tulane's visiting Ole Miss. I saw the line on this, and it kind of it surprised me a bit. 11.5, Ole Miss is favored by at home, and I guess Vaught Hemingway counts for some points. I get that. But Tulane has handled business against two Power 4 opponents. Now, they aren't Ole Miss, but they hammered Northwestern, and they took care of Duke. How conceivable is it that Tulane could go on the road and win this game against Ole Miss?
Well, it's not inconceivable, and that line is trending in Tulane's favor because it opened at about 2 touchdowns. So the fact that it's down to 11.5 suggests a lot of people share your sentiments that Tulane could go in there and really make it a game. Jake Retzlaff, man, he's the real deal. He can really burn you with his legs. And so that's an element that Ole Miss was obviously exposed on last week. Taylen Green, you know, torched them with his legs from the quarterback position. But I think on the flip side of that, you mentioned the two power conference teams that Tulane has played. Neither Darian Mensah nor Preston Stone have that sort of dynamic wiggle to them at quarterback. It's kind of weird. Who's going to play quarterback for Ole Miss?
I
think that has a huge bearing on this game. Because
who do you think should play? Let's say Austin Simmons is near full health.
Yeah, and I don't think he is, right? Because if he wasn't good enough to play last week, then what's changed so much in a week that he's 100%? Like, I understand, like, if he needed to play, he could. But Trinidad Chambliss was so good that you might actually be better off sticking with him, because even if Austin Simmons does play, I don't think they're going to use the whole playbook, because there's only so much you can do if you have a bad ankle. And so, I mean, I think Trinidad Chambliss would be the move here, because he could bring a wrinkle that Tulane defensively has not had to deal with yet in terms of quarterback mobility. So, I mean, that's a really fun game. And, you know, but at the end of the day, like, these are showcase opportunities for the American with Tulane, just like, you know, South Florida playing Boise State, or South Florida playing Florida, you know, et cetera, Memphis playing Arkansas. Like, they're big opportunities for the league. They're big opportunities for these teams. But your CFP representative is still going to be whoever wins the league. You know, I mean, Memphis could lose to Arkansas by 30. Tulane could whip Ole Miss. But then if Tulane can't win the American, like, it's not going to matter. So I do think that's an important, like, caveat to this conversation. It's like, at the end of the day, like, yeah, these are important games, but it's still really going to be your league champion that comes out of it.
Now, also today, Lane Kiffin said he sort of called his shot going into the offseason. He says John Sumrall will be one of his peers in the SEC going into next year. What do you think the likelihood of that is, you know, happening, where he could take over a Florida or maybe Kentucky or whatever it is? But John Sumrall, like, what do you think of him as a candidate for an SEC gig?
Yeah, I really like him. I enjoyed his perspective on, like, what that interaction with Monty Kiffin meant to him a few years back. And, you know, I don't know if you got a chance to see that, but, you know, it just seemed like a head coach with a lot of sort of self-confidence and sort of, not afraid to admit that, like, hey, a few years ago, I was a young coach just starting out in this, you know, as a head coach, and, you know, talking about what Monty Kiffin meant to him and the words that they shared after Troy and Ole Miss played a few years back. Like, I enjoyed that. I enjoy watching his teams play. I think there's a great chance that he's going to be an SEC head coach, but I think he can also afford to be a little bit selective. I mean, you talk, you know, you've probably seen the remarks that Hunter Yurecek made this week about the realities of NIL at Arkansas. And, you know, and then you look at Kentucky. I know that's John Sumrall's alma mater, but, I mean, what's their commitment to football like in this era? So if I'm John Sumrall, I'm not necessarily just jumping at the first job that comes along. I mean, there's obviously, like, you know, if you get an SEC opportunity, you have to consider that. But, you know, if I'm him, I'm waiting around to see, you know, you mentioned Florida. I'm waiting to see if Florida comes open. I'm waiting to see if, I mean, heck, what happens at Alabama, man? I know right. the Alabama fans would want to shoot higher than the Tulane coach, because that's the way they view themselves. But I don't think Nick Saban's coming out of retirement. So I, you know, like, you're going to have to hire somebody. So if I'm John Sumrall, I would maybe be picky, because I think he's established himself as the premier coaching candidate right now in the entire group of five.
Should I give any air to South Carolina being a wild card going into the offseason? Because there's been a lot with Virginia Tech opening, obviously. Frank Beamer, legendary coach, statue coach there. Shane Beamer at South Carolina has seen some success. There is that thought that he could potentially, you know, go follow in his father's footsteps. Should I give that any air? Because, like, my brain tells me no, I shouldn't.
Well, here's how it would happen. Here's how Shane Beamer going to Virginia Tech goes down. It's South Carolina struggles to make a bowl, and the temperature in Columbia gets raised on Shane Beamer. He starts looking for a place to restart the clock. And Virginia Tech comes out of the woodwork with a massive plan to invest in football. And I think they're working on that. Like, that's something their AD has been pushing for. They've fallen way behind. But if they're able to put together a package to start resolving that. If you're Shane Beamer and you're like, all right, we're about to go to 9 conference games in the SEC. We're not going to stop playing Clemson. So we're going to have 10 really challenging games every year. Meanwhile, the ACC still hasn't said they're going to 9 yet. I mean, they're still at 8 conference games. If you're going to get the investment that you need at Virginia Tech to build the staff and the recruiting structure that you need, I can see it becoming appealing. I don't think it's probably very appealing right now, but if South Carolina struggles, and keep in mind now, they were a top 15 team preseason. I don't think they're going to be anywhere near that when this season is over. Yeah, what's that temperature like on him in terms of a hot seat at South Carolina? And if it's hot enough, yeah, I think he would have to look at maybe restarting the clock, especially somewhere where he basically grew up at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. So I wouldn't altogether rule it out.
Yeah, but the one thing that does give me pause, and I know there's been a lot of coaches say, I'm going to die in, you know, in insert, you know, college city here, and then they end up leaving that same offseason. So, like, what coaches say doesn't always hold true. But I've heard him talk on multiple occasions about wanting to blaze his own trail and not consistently be Frank's son. He said that on the SEC documentary on Netflix. And he said it on multiple occasions elsewhere in pressers. So, like, that's one thing that in my brain I can't really get past.
Yeah, but I think he has blazed his own trail. I mean, I think he's done a good job at South Carolina. He's been better than pretty much anyone they've had there other than Steve Spurrier, you know, since they joined the SEC. I mean, Lou Holtz had a moment, right, like a brief moment. But consistently now, over 5 years, like, he's – done a pretty good job at a tough place to win in the SEC. So I do think he's established himself as his own coach. And I don't think that this generation of players that he's going to be recruiting remember his dad. I mean, it's been a long time now. It's been over a decade since he retired. And really, I mean, the last 5 years of his tenure, Virginia Tech wasn't even very good. So, I mean, most of the players he would be recruiting, I mean, Virginia Tech hasn't been good in their lifetime. So, you know, I mean, to a certain extent, I think he's accomplished what he wanted to. And set out and kind of made his own name.
Yeah, all right. Now, getting to the top of the sport, I'm still confused, David, as confused as I was going into last week. Now, I've learned some things. I learned Tennessee's decent. I learned that Georgia still to be reckoned with. But, like, I look at the top of the sport, and I look at the number one team in the country, Ohio State, and I look at their big win against Texas. That win, correct me if I'm wrong, that's not holding up. Right, based on what we've seen from Arch and that team since that game was played. That was only a 14-7 win. Doesn't feel, and they did it at home, doesn't feel like it's holding up that well.
No, it's a great point. It's really not. I mean, I think as you zoom out.
And I guess LSU-Clemson, you could say the same thing about LSU-Clemson, number 3 team in the country.
Well, right. So, my point is Florida State and Miami, their victories are holding up better than anyone's right now. I mean, you look at Miami and beating Notre Dame, and obviously Notre Dame's 0-2, but I still think Notre Dame's good. And then just trouncing a strong South Florida team last week. And then you look at Florida State, and they beat an Alabama team that Gabe, let's not joke around. Like, Alabama's been really good since then. Yeah, it was Louisiana Monroe. Yeah, it was Wisconsin. But, man, like, they look awesome offensively since that Florida State game. So, you know, but the weird thing is we haven't seen anything from Florida State since then because they played East Texas A&M, then they had a bye. This week they play Kent State. Next week they play Virginia. So, you know, it's going to be another couple weeks until they play Miami that we really get a chance to figure out, like, how legitimate FSU is. But I mean, so far, you know, if you're really power ranking teams, I think you'd have to have some order of Miami, Florida State there at the top.
Next week is going to fire me up, though. I know I'm looking past week 4 to week 5, but there's a lot of good matchups out there. We're going to have Oregon, Penn State, Alabama, Georgia. I think LSU, Ole Miss. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, next week should be a pretty telling week with the top of the sport. Probably the most telling week to date.
Yeah, thank goodness the wedding I've got to go to is this Saturday and not next Saturday.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Where's it at? We destination wedding, or can you just drive to it?
No, it's Richmond, Virginia.
Ah.
So, yeah, I've never been to Richmond before. I've heard it's nice. So, you know, I'm not going to be stopping off in Blacksburg for a game. I don't think that would be worth it. But I'm with you. Next week is a banger. Alabama, Georgia in particular, goodness, that's going to be awesome. Ole Miss, LSU. I mean, that's just the SEC.
I look at my timeline, too, and everybody's like, you would think that the Georgia-Alabama game was this weekend based right. on how many people are just discussing it and getting their early takes off about it. Let's watch week four before we start breaking that down. That's my opinion.
No, for sure, for sure. But it's kind of like a season defining game for Alabama. Because look, if they lose that one, then the margin for error is completely gone by late September, and the heat continues to ratchet up on Kalen DeBoer. If they win the game, well, all is well. I mean, I think all this, just yelling and furor and anger and just fear from the Alabama fans starts to kind of dissipate, and they get back in Kalen DeBoer's corner. So I mean, it could very well be the game that his entire coaching tenure hinges on.
And this week there's one particularly fun game to me, because there's a team that's been down in the dumps for a while and they've been waiting to be back up. Is this the Nebraska's back week? They play Michigan at home. They're 3-0. Dylan Raiola has yet to throw an interception. Right now, Michigan's 2.5-point favorites. They could spring the upset on an AP Top 25 team. Like, this week feels like it could be the Nebraska's back week. No?
I think it might be, Gabe. The stars are aligned, because you think about it, a year ago, they had Illinois at their place this exact week on the calendar, and Illinois was ranked. And it was, we were saying all the same things last year, but Luke Altmyer went in there and did his thing in that fourth quarter, and Nebraska suffered another heartbreaking loss. Well, this year, it's no longer Nebraska with the freshman quarterback. It's Michigan going on the road, Bryce Underwood making his Big Ten debut in what is going to be a hostile environment. We saw the way he struggled at Oklahoma in a similar type of environment. And also, this is one of those games that Sharon Moore won't be there. The yep. head coach is suspended.
Oh, but Biff's there, man. They're in great hands. Biff. Yeah, yeah. Biff is the ultimate football guy.
Yeah. Sleeveless Biff gonna lead the Wolverines. It's almost impossible to genuinely say that a team that's lost 27 in a row against ranked opponents is just going to
correct.
Is going to win. That's a really, really, it feels like a reach, but Nebraska is trending in the right direction. Now it's year three under Matt Rhule. They finally made a bowl game last season for the first time since 2016.
Oh my God.
And I think they're going to beat Michigan. I think Michigan's got, some flaws defensively, and I don't know that Bryce Underwood is ready to go on the road and lead a team to a big time Big Ten victory yet. He's looked good against bad teams, but he looked bad the one time he played a good team. And I think Nebraska's a good team, and I don't know that I trust a freshman to go on the road and win in that setting.
I will say this: I've never felt bad for Nebraska. Okay, I grew up a Colorado fan. There are reasons I have never felt bad for Nebraska, but if I watch that game, Nebraska holds a pretty short lead going into the fourth quarter, and you see a pick and you see them completely implode and lose that game to Michigan, even though Michigan hasn't played well, I will say this. I might actually feel bad for Nebraska if that happens this weekend. I might actually feel a little bit of sadness in my soul if I have to watch Nebraska go through that again, and Nebraska fans.
It's just what they do. They have mastered the art of, for a while there, it was kind of like Tennessee was that team that could always find a way to lose and could never quite get over the hump in the big game. And well, that was certainly Tennessee's story last week. But, by and large, it felt like Tennessee had that status in college football as the once great former power that just can't get out of its own way. And that's no real longer really the case. It's pretty much Nebraska on an island there. And shoot, you could even throw Florida into that category with them, maybe. But it's good. It's good for college football when some of these old brands come back. And I love the fact that Miami, Florida State are in the conversation right now, and that, maybe after Saturday, Nebraska will be right there with them. I think the stars are aligned. So, we got that game on CBS. I'm pretty
going into week five. It could feel like the 90s all over again.
Exactly right. I mean, it really could. I'm fired up to see kind of what the Big Ten would look like if Nebraska could get good again. And for that matter, like even USC, like they yep. got Michigan State, like that's a chance for them to start 2-0 in the Big Ten and make the Big Ten more interesting. Than is okay. Well, it's Oregon, Penn State, and Ohio State. Like, you know, I think it would be good for college football and good for the Big Ten if USC and Nebraska could wiggle their way into that conversation.
Yep, no doubt, no doubt. But I'll let you roll, David. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk again on Friday.
All right, man. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. He's David Cobb, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports, role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. And then Thursday with Jeffrey Wright and company. Now, college football is here, and as always in the South, we're excited. We have anticipation every single week, and there's no better place to get that excitement and that anticipation out than Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. You walk in, the energy will hit you. They have wall-to-wall screens, 20 HD TV screens to be exact. They will tune whatever TV you want to whatever game that you want. Your friends there next to you will be locked in. Every game's going to be front and center, and they have seating in there. It's more comfortable than what you have in your living room. Whether you're all in on your favorite team or just love the thrill of big matchups in college football, Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica is the spot to feel every play, every score, and every win. You can place an order from their game day menu while you're sitting right there. You can get nachos, you can get a hot dog, and get whatever you want. It's like game day at the stadium, but also you can get some gourmet food as well. You can order from Guy Fieri's restaurant, and they'll deliver it right to you in that wonderful seat. It's game day done right. Whoever you're rooting for, watch the game in comfort and style at Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. They have a full-service sports betting experience, in-game wagering, staff betting windows, and they have 10 self-betting kiosks, so you're always going to be able to lock in the bet of your choice. It's the ultimate in college football viewing experiences. If you want to get into the games and get in on the action, you need to get into Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. We'll see you on Saturday. You must be 21 or older to gamble. No one to stop before you start. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Also worth mentioning on that note, coming up on the 27th, so next weekend, we will have a three-hour trivia fiesta over at Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. Of course, the man with the plan there is Kevin Cerrito, but Connor and I will be on hand to talk with you. There'll be prizes available. It'll be a really fun time. We'll continue to remind you about that, but just wanted to drop that right in your lap right now. But we need to go ahead and get to some NFL conversation, so let's get to a trip around the National Football League next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it. All right, so the Raiders lose 20-9 on Monday Night Football to the Los Angeles Chargers, and the big question was about Ashton Jeanty and his usage. I think he only had 11 carries, even though he broke a bunch of tackles. I mentioned yesterday he needs to be better at all the other things, but also he's a guy who should get 15 to 20 carries per game. I mean, you drafted him sixth overall. What else is he there for? Well, Ashton Jeanty had similar thoughts. This is what he had to say today in a press conference. I think I agree with you, Ashton. No notes, to be honest with you. You asked me about this yesterday, Connor, and I think I'm right there in lockstep with Ashton, and I think the Raiders need to give him the ball a lot more. And it's surprising because Pete Carroll, throughout his career as the Seattle Seahawks head coach, always had that lead back who would take the ball 20 to 25 times a game. Marshawn Lynch was a guy for him for years and years and years. It's kind of strange that they're sort of breaking Ashton Jeanty in before they really give him all of that responsibility. Now, I think he needs to be better on third down. I think he needs to be better in pass protection so he can be on the field a little bit more. But Zamir White should not be in there getting normal between the tackles runs when you have Ashton Jeanty. Just kind of strange. Now, to the people that are probably asking themselves the question I asked myself when I saw this sound, it was in response to, are you ready to take on the responsibility of 15 to 20 to 25 carries per game? So it was not, hey, do you think you're being misused or anything like that? It wasn't a shot at the coaching staff or anything like that. It was very much above board. I thought it was a well responded to question, but just wanted to clear that up in case anybody had confusion. We knew. If you've seen a clip of the injury, you knew. But Khalil Mack is going to be out for an extended period of time, the whole year. he had a dislocated elbow in Monday night's game against the Raiders. It was nasty. And can I be honest? This was one of the very few injuries I went back to look at. And the first couple times I watched, I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
And then I looked at, like, while the other player from the Chargers was shooting in.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and I go, oh, my God. I couldn't believe my eyes. His elbow bent the entire different way. But we'll see what happens to Khalil Mack going into the future. Still a talented player. Maybe still has some more football left in him. But this year, doesn't have any football left in him, to say the least. Kyle Shanahan said Brock Purdy has a chance to play coming up this weekend. I don't know what that means. I don't know if he's going to force him in there, because Mac Jones played pretty damn well in his absence. 279 yards and 3 touchdowns. No interceptions with a mash unit at wide receiver. So we'll see what happens. He's one of my starting quarterbacks in the 92-9 league, so I obviously hope he can give it a go. But Kyle Shanahan says that be on the lookout. Brock Purdy may be off the injury report by the time we get to Sunday. Now, this was interesting. We spent a lot of the first segment yesterday talking about Tom Brady and the conflict of interest that's going on with his minority ownership with the Raiders and his job at Fox Sports as a color analyst, doing the game of the week for Fox Sports at 3:25 every single Sunday. And we learned, obviously, that Tom Brady meets with Chip Kelly 2 to 3 times a week to talk about offensive game planning. Ben Johnson, who is the Bears head coach, who plays that Raiders team in week 4, and this week is in the game of the week and is going to have to talk to Tom Brady about game planning and players and everything else, he basically said, I don't know why it's that big of a deal. Ben Johnson doesn't think it's a big deal. And I would tell Ben Johnson, if you can get any edge on anybody, it should be a big deal. Like, I don't think this should be happening. But he basically said, I'm not going to give him trade secrets. That's the term he used. I'm not going to give him trade secrets about what we're doing here in Chicago. So I found that a little interesting, Connor, didn't you? The fact that Ben Johnson was like, I don't even know why people are blowing this out of proportion. I feel like it should be blown out of proportion. I feel like this should be something that we discuss and we call out for what it is. And that's a conflict of interest right in front of our face, and the NFL's playing in front of our face with it.
Yeah, I think that the point that everybody was trying to make was, yes, we understand that teams may not actually be giving some secrets to Tom Brady.
Yeah,
but
they're not
going to
tell you the opening
is
script.
Still there,
you know?
And who knows? Somebody might misspeak at some moment, and it is a conflict of interest. And just because it's Tom Brady doesn't mean that we need to change the rules.
Yep, 100%. Hey, can we get a round of applause ready and a congratulations ready? Stephon Diggs and Cardi B are expecting a child. I didn't even know they were in a relationship, or they may not be.
No, we went over it like 2 weeks ago. They're still together.
They're still together?
Yeah.
Okay. I know they've had some tumultuous times, though. It's been a little up and down.
Good for them.
Well, with a kid coming in, let's get rid of the pink substances.
Maybe dad superpowers. Who knows?
Who knows? But Cardi B and Stephon Diggs, just want to give you a congratulations. Congratulations on the baby that you are expecting. That will do it for a trip around the National Football League. And we're going to put a wrap on hour number 2 coming up next with Small Talk right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. We have one little topic, then we have a submission from a listener that we need to discuss here for Small Talk. But first of all, Stephen A. Smith, it is being reported that his annual salary now is pushing $40 million after a SiriusXM contract that he has signed. ESPN deal, 5 years, $105 million. SiriusXM contract, 3 years, $36 million. And then he has revenue from his YouTube channel and podcast, which gets him to $40 million. That is more than, and The Athletic did a nice write-up on this, that is more than Jalen Brunson of the Knicks, Rudy Gobert of the Timberwolves, Garrett Cole, starting pitcher for the Yankees, Justin Jefferson, probably the best, if not top two, best wide receivers in the National Football League, Mookie Betts, Penei Sewell, the right tackle for the Lions, and then in the NHL, it is way, way, way more, upwards of, I think, $27 million more dollars per year than Austin Matthews, and also the best player in the NHL, Connor McDavid. That's too much. Good for him.
It's way too much.
Listen, good for him. I fail to see how he's shown that amount of value. But when we talk about value, it's what somebody's willing to pay you. And ESPN, SiriusXM, and all of his sponsors on his podcast channel, they're willing to pay him that, so I guess he's worth that. It's bothersome to me.
I think my main issue with it is how much talent had to be let go and how different ESPN is to give him that amount of money.
Yeah, listen, I don't like being a pocket watcher. You know what I mean? Like, what another man makes, he makes. But it's out there in the public, so I figured it was worth discussing. I failed to see how Stephen A. and his antics have equaled out to $40 million per year. But good for him in the end of the day. I don't want to hate too much. Good for him. All right, now we do have a submission from one of our listeners. Ryan Speaks on Twitter, on X. I think this is sort of in response to what we've seen in the past week with college football coaches, high-level college football coaches, Dabo Swinney and Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly, of course, after the game against Florida, went after the media, who asked him basically, what do you think about your offense? And he just could not. That was too much. Just a ridiculous question. I can't believe you asked that question. We get that. Dabo Swinney, of course, yesterday spoke to the media and basically crashed out fully on Clemson fans and the Clemson media, saying, I could go elsewhere. I don't need this. This crap stinks. Connor has likened him to the narcissistic parent, saying, I guess I do nothing right. Right? So that's where we're at with these two coaches. And I think a lot of people, including Ryan, are asking themselves, Who's the least likable of those two? Because I think they're probably bottom rung when it comes to likability among college football coaches. So I'm going to ask you first. I'll tune into this conversation after I give you the floor here. Who's less likable, Dabo Swinney or Brian Kelly?
I feel like it has to be Brian Kelly.
I think
considering. He made a decision that led to the loss of life of someone.
That's true.
I will also add, at least Dabo has had success. Like real success. Well, like championship level success.
Okay, wait a second.
As a head coach.
Wait a second. I have to see this. I don't want to say this unless I have it right in college football. Active wins leaders. Brian Kelly's the active wins leader.
How many championships does Brian Kelly have?
Well, he was Notre Dame for a while, so.
That's okay.
That's true.
How many championships does Brian Kelly have?
He doesn't have any natties. Okay, I get you. I think that this comes down to, and I kind of agree with your sentiment, there was loss of life under Brian Kelly's watch. Was that at Cincinnati?
I thought that was at Notre Dame.
Early Notre Dame? I thought it was Cincinnati. We could look that up. So I think you probably in him, but I think it comes down to your preference. And maybe I lied here. Kirk Ferentz.
It was Notre Dame.
Kirk Ferentz is the active wins leader, but the real active wins leader. Just because Kirk Ferentz has been coaching for 20 years, I can't give him that. But next would be Brian Kelly. Then it's Dabo Swinney.
It was at
Brian
Notre
Kelly
Dame.
Brian Kelly has 195. Dabo Swinney has 180. It was at Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was at Notre Dame. I think it comes down to how do you feel about the arrogance that consistently gets shown by Dabo versus just like the full-time, all full, curmudgeon that Brian Kelly is. And Dabo's arrogance has always rubbed me the wrong way. But I guess I probably lean to Brian Kelly because I get the sense, at least with Dabo, he has poured into that fan base at times, been a source of hope and happiness for that community. I don't know if I've seen the same from Brian Kelly. I don't know if he treats the people around him the same way. So I think I'd lean Brian Kelly this particular.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Conversation, but I think they're both probably bottom five in college football, maybe the bottom two when it comes to the likability scale.
Both are unbelievably unlikable.
Now, who's at the top?
Who's the
like Dan Lanning, Kenny Dillingham? Like who do we put there?
Ooh,
Marcus Freeman. Who's on that list?
That's a real tough question.
I think I'd lean Dan Lanning.
I don't know if a lot of people would agree with you.
Really, people don't like Dan.
I think that some people don't like Dan.
Colorado fans, from what he said?
Maybe. I think that some people don't
Kenny?
Like Dan.
Do we default to Kenny here?
I don't know.
Do people
I'd have
like
to,
Kenny?
Like,
I know
really
Mississippi State fans don't like Kenny.
That's a real hard question. I don't know. I don't think I know.
Let's chew on it for a day, and we'll revisit this tomorrow in Small Topic. Let's grab a break on that note. When we come back, we'll talk some college football with my guy, Colton Denning. Stick around for that.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.